Hey everyone. Ever had that moment where your favorite app decides to crash right when you're about to snag those concert tickets? Talk about frustrating.
Yeah, that's the worst.
And it makes you wonder what's going on behind the scenes, right? Well, that's exactly why we're diving into the world of secure coding today. We're going to figure out how those glitches happen and, more importantly, how to avoid them.
Sounds like a plan.
We're lucky enough to have our hands on this really cool document that's basically like a cheat sheet for building seriously secure software. It's all about secure coding guidelines and standards, stuff that keeps your data safe and sound.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. A lot of folks don't realize that security really starts at the very beginning with the code itself. It's like building a house, right?
Totally. You wouldn't want a shaky foundation.
Exactly. Any weakness in the source code, whether it's an honest mistake or, you know, something intentional, like a hidden backdoor.
Okay, whoa, hold on. Intentional, like someone purposely making the code vulnerable.
It happens more than you'd think. But whether it's accidental or on purpose, those weaknesses, they can turn into huge security risks down the line. We're talking system crashes, data leaks, you name it.
That's scary stuff. So if we're thinking of the code itself as the first line of defense, what are some common ways it becomes a security liability? What do developers need to watch out for?
Well, this document does a great job of highlighting common vulnerabilities. In fact, it even mentions a report by OWASP, the Open Web Application Security Project. They put together this list of the top 10 web application security risks. Think of it like the most wanted list for developers, security-wise.
Oh, I like that. So it's like a cheat sheet of what not to do, basically.
Exactly. And one of the big ones on that list is something called a buffer overflow.
Buffer overflow. Sounds kind of technical.
It can be, but imagine this. You're on a website, right? And there's a form asking for your address.
Okay, yeah, I filled out a million of those.
Behind the scenes, the system sets aside a certain amount of memory to store whatever you type in. But what if a hacker comes along and enters an address that's like a mile long, way longer than what the system is expecting?
Uh-oh. I have a feeling that's not good.
It's not. Without the right safeguards in place, that extra data spills over, overflows from the space it was given, like trying to cram a month's worth of clothes into a tiny overnight bag.
Okay, I can picture that.
And that overflow can end up overwriting other important data, which can really mess things up, make the whole application go haywire.
Yikes. So input validation is key here. It's like having a security guard at the door, making sure nobody brings in more than they should.
Exactly. You need those checks and balances to prevent chaos.
Makes sense. Now, there was something else in here that caught my eye. Toshi2u. What in the world is that?
Yes. Toshi2u. Time of check to time of use. It's a mouthful, I know.
It's a mouthful, and it sounds a little ominous, to be honest.
It can be. It's all about those tiny split-second gaps in time that can be exploited. Think of it like buying a concert ticket online. The website says there's one left, you go to buy it, and bam, someone else got it first.
Don't even remind me. Happens every time. But how does that relate to security vulnerabilities?
Well, that split second between checking for something and then actually using it, that's where the vulnerability lies. Let's say the system checks if you have permission to open a file, but in that tiny gap before you actually open it, an attacker swaps it out for something malicious.
Wait, so I think I have access, but I'm actually getting something totally different.
Exactly. It's a bait and switch on a technical level.
That is seriously sneaky. Like someone swapping out the stage props right before the curtain goes up.
Exactly. And those timing issues, they're some of the trickiest to catch and fix because they happen so fast.
Okay, you've definitely given me a whole new appreciation for the complexity of all this.
It's a wild world out there.
Speaking of wild, this document also talks about backdoors. I always thought those were things hackers created to break in.
That's a common misconception. It's true that hackers love to exploit them, sure, but backdoors can actually serve legitimate purposes too.
Really? Tell me more about that, because
that's
not what I would have thought. So backdoors, right? I get that hackers love them, but you're saying there's a legit reason for them to exist.
Sometimes, yeah. Think of them like those hidden passages in old mansions, you know? Sometimes for secret rendezvous, but sometimes just a handy shortcut for the staff.
Interesting. So how do they figure into this whole secure coding thing?
Well, sometimes developers will actually build in a backdoor on purpose while they're still working on the software.
Makes sense, like a shortcut to test things out.
Exactly. Makes things quicker, easier to troubleshoot. But, and this is important,
they forget to board it up when they're done.
You got it. If they don't get rid of that backdoor before the software goes live, that's a 5-alarm security risk.
Oh, yeah. Anyone could just waltz right in.
Exactly. That's why secure coding is so big on removing any kind of temporary access point and sticking to strict security rules throughout the whole development process.
It's like making sure all the doors and windows are locked up tight before you head out, right?
Precisely.
Okay, so we've talked about code vulnerabilities themselves, but what about how different software systems talk to each other? I'm thinking APIs. Honestly, I could use a little refresher on those myself.
Sure, APIs or application programming interfaces are how different software systems communicate and exchange data.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought. But it still seems a little fuzzy, you know?
Think about it like ordering food online. You go to the restaurant's website or app, right? That's how you interact with their system. But behind the scenes, that website or app is using an API to talk to the restaurant's actual system, sending your order, one pad Thai, please, and then bringing back the info like your order will be ready in 30 minutes.
Okay, so the API is like the messenger, making sure everything runs smoothly. But how do we make sure those messages don't end up in the wrong hands? That's got to be a concern.
Absolutely, and that's where API security comes in.
Yeah.
One of the fundamental aspects is authentication.
Authentication, right? Like having a password.
Exactly. Just like needing a username and password to log into a website, APIs often use similar methods to verify who's sending those requests. Could be something like API keys, kind of like unique IDs for each user, or even fancier things like OAuth.
Oath, that rings a bell.
It's what you're using when you log into an app using your Google or Facebook account, so you don't have to make a whole new profile for every single thing.
Oh, right. That makes sense. But authentication just tells you who's knocking, right? How do you make sure they're allowed to do what they want once they're in?
You're on the right track. That's what authorization comes in.
Okay, authorization. So there's like a two-step process.
Exactly. It's about setting permissions, making sure each user or system can only access what they're supposed to, nothing more. Imagine a bouncer at a club, right? They check your ID, that's authentication, but then they got to make sure you're on the list or have the right wristband to actually get in, that's authorization.
Okay, I'm with you. So you've got your authentication bouncer checking IDs, but this document also mentions something called API gateways. Is that like extra security at the door?
It's more like a whole security checkpoint. An API gateway is a central hub that manages all incoming API requests. It can enforce traffic rules, make sure users are who they say they are, even inspect the data going back and forth to make sure there's nothing fishy going on.
Wow, so it's a pretty big deal for security then.
Definitely, especially when you're dealing with lots of different systems all talking to each other.
Makes sense. Now, there's something else in here, REST and SOAP. Are those different types of APIs?
They are. REST and SOAP are two different ways of designing APIs, each with its own quirks and security considerations.
Okay, so for someone like me who's not a tech wizard, what's the main difference security-wise?
Think of SOAP, which stands for Simple Object Access Protocol, as the more traditional approach. It's got some built-in security features, but it can be a bit trickier to set up.
The REST.
REST, short for Representational State Transfer, is kind of the newer kid on the block. It's known for being more flexible, easier to work with. It might not have all those built-in security bells and whistles like ESO, but it's easy enough to secure using common protocols.
So which one is better for security?
It's not really a matter of better or worse. The best choice really depends on the specific app you're building, how important security is for that particular app, and what resources you have available.
So like most things in life, it's not a one-size-fits-all situation.
Exactly. Sometimes a mix of approaches might be the way to go.
Makes sense. We've covered some serious ground here. Common ways code can be vulnerable, API security, the whole nine yards. But let's bring it back down to earth for a minute. What are some practical things that developers should be thinking about when they're actually writing code?
That's a great question. This document actually does a good job of highlighting the difference between secure coding standards and secure coding guidelines, which is important.
Okay, break that down for me.
Think of standards like traffic laws. They're non-negotiable. You have to follow them to make sure everyone stays safe. Guidelines, on the other hand, are more like best practices. Think of it like driving tips from, say, a race car driver.
Okay, so standards are the law. Guidelines are pro tips. I like it. What are some of the big ones when it comes to secure coding practices?
Well, we already touched on input validation. That's crucial for preventing those buffer overflow vulnerabilities. It's all about being careful and checking any data that comes into your application.
Right, don't let any sneaky data gremlins through.
Exactly. Another important principle is least privilege. It means you only give your users and processes the absolute minimum access they need to do their job and nothing more.
Gotcha. So, you wouldn't give everyone in an office a key to the executive washroom.
Precisely. It limits the damage if someone does manage to compromise a user account or a process. And finally, proper error handling and logging are crucial, even if they seem like minor details.
Wait, error handling? I always thought those errors were just for the developers to figure out what went wrong.
They are, but if you're not careful about how you handle those errors, the messages that pop up could actually give away sensitive information to someone trying to break in. Imagine an error message that accidentally reveals your entire database query along with the "oops, something went wrong" message.
Ouch, not good.
Not good at all. That's why secure coding stresses the importance of logging those errors in a way that helps the developers without putting sensitive data at risk. It's all about finding that balance.
So we've covered all these ways to make code more secure, all these things developers need to keep in mind. But it sounds like securing software isn't a one-time thing. It's got to be an ongoing process, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And that kind of leads into a really interesting point this document makes. It talks about this idea of software-defined security. Have you ever heard of that?
It rings a bell, but I can't say I know exactly what it means.
Basically, it's about shifting away from those traditional hardware-based security solutions, you know, like firewalls and intrusion detection systems, and instead using software itself to enforce security policies, but across the entire network.
Oh, okay. So instead of having this one big clunky security gate at the entrance, it's more like having checkpoints and security measures embedded throughout the whole network.
Exactly. It's way more flexible, way more adaptable. Like, imagine instead of having security guards just standing in one place, they can move around and respond to whatever comes up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This approach gives you a lot more control over network traffic and those security policies, and it can be super dynamic.
I can see how that'd be important now. What with cloud computing, remote work, everything being so interconnected.
Exactly. Software-defined security. It's got a lot of potential for keeping up with all the crazy cybersecurity threats out there that are constantly changing.
For sure. Wow, we've covered a ton of ground today, from the nitty-gritty of those code vulnerabilities to the big picture of network security.
It's been quite the deep dive.
It really has. So if our listeners take away just one thing from today's deep dive, what should it be?
That's easy. Security, it's everyone's responsibility, right? From those developers writing the code to us, the people actually using the software. We all got to play our part.
Couldn't agree more. And it's important to remember, building secure software, it's not about being 100% invulnerable. It's about understanding what those risks are, putting up the best defenses you can, and staying vigilant as technology changes, right?
Right on.
Awesome. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's deep dive. If you're interested in learning more about these secure coding practices, be sure to check out the show notes. And don't forget to take a look at that OWASP top 10 list we talked about. It's a great place to start. Until next time, stay curious and stay secure.